Carter.
I'm Eloi.
And I'm Erin.
And if you don't know three black bitches who love true crime, you do now. This is the I Ain't a Killer podcast.
Hello, governor.
Welcome back, Killer Bees, to another episode of I Ain't a Killer.
Hey.
You're sticking with us. It's the second month of the year.
Carter, do you want
History Month?
So Carter, do you want to explain to our friends and listeners
what happened to my episode?
Why we didn't have an episode.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, everyone.
I deeply apologize for the lack of episode. And, I was in a fucking tizzy trying to get the virtual studio set up and make space for us to record another episode, and I deleted an entire episode, my episode to be precise. Oh. It was a really good one too. I felt really good about it. I had good energy. I felt like I told the story well. It had gumption. There was reactions. Like, it was great. And now it's
so good.
Gone. It's lost forever.
They've got to do something about that. Like, no way you click delete and it really deletes.
It really deleted.
I'm pretty
like, what the fuck?
I'm pretty sure if you emailed them, they'd be like, oh, we got it.
I emailed them. I messaged them. I was about to call, but I was so mad. I was like, if I keep pursuing this, I'm going to fuck around and pull my own hair out. So I'm going to give it to God.
I wish we could just email the FBI and tell us to send it a sub.
Right, because I know y'all watched it.
Oh, they'd probably be having so much fun.
I hate it.
Giggling at
it.
Us.
I hate that for me.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just, you said you're going to use that story like in the future.
Yeah, I'm going to wait like a few months till y'all forget the details so you can laugh at my jokes again.
Okay. Oh, I already forgot the details.
Yeah, I slick like have no idea what that episode was about. No clue.
I forgot. Wow. Just the fact. I can't even tell you the nigga who did it. I don't know. Yeah, run the tape.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't all the way remember either. I would have.
No, that's good though. That's good. It'll be fresh by the time you bring it back up. And you can be like, have y'all ever heard of this story? We'll be like, hell no. What's up?
Please, you doing research for a story like, damn, did we do this already?
But yeah, anyway, we're back.
Yeah, so current and crime.
Okay. Yeah, shout out to all the nigga news outlets that be sending the most unhinged stories to our timelines, because that's really all they good for, and they be delivering. Oh, nigga. Did y'all know the Shade Room is run by the church?
Oh my God.
What church? Scientology.
Like black church. So
please, not Scientology.
So the Potter House, you know, TD Jakes like organization or whatever the fuck, they run Shade Room. Stephanie Ike or Stephanie EK or whatever, she was the creative director for a Shade Room. And then they have a Christian version of the Shade Room called The Same Room.
No, they don't.
Swear to God. No, swear to God. You can look all this up, and I can send you TikToks with like sources. Cause Chief Nosy Bystander, shout out to her. She be citing like all her sources. She'll have it in the background and green screen. She put links in her bio and shit. Like, it's real. But yeah, the church runs the Shade Room. And how they found out was because it was something going on with like, I guess one of TD Jakes' relatives or like his daughter-in-law or something named Cora. I don't know who that, I'm fucking up the details, which is why y'all need to look it up. They wasn't running the story about her. And so somebody was like, fans was like, why y'all not speaking on this? Y'all always messy. Y'all always talking about niggas. Like, what's up? And they was like, oh no, we didn't think about it. Like, we never heard anything about this story. Da, 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 da. And it's like, how have y'all not heard about this? Everybody's talking about this. Mm-hmm. And come to find out, they didn't want to mention it because it's related to, you know, the Jakes family or whatever. Related to the church specifically. But yeah.
Wow.
That makes so much sense as to why it's so fucking anti-black.
Yeah.
That is
and anti-queer.
That is not what I expected.
Yes, and anti-queer. How they always put in like trans and queer kids. Like, they'll just put a picture and be like, thoughts.
Right.
What are your thoughts, Shade Room? Since you got God and Jesus on your side, ask them niggas what they think. And tell us in the comments.
Amen. I love TikTok.
You know, TikTok is really the future.
Expose Central. Niggas be having time on TikTok.
All the time. And I got time to watch.
I don't have time to watch, but I still do.
Right.
Okay. 2 a.m. Okay. Yeah.
Back to our regularly scheduled program, and I just had to say that.
Yeah, thanks for that. That was low-key a current and crime. but we have a real one. Did y'all have an article? I got one, though.
I don't have an article.
Okay. So the current in crime for this week is from The Guardian, and the title is Doppelganger Murder. German prosecutors claim woman killed lookalike to fake death. And this was published on January 30th of this year, 2023. So a 23-year-old German-Iraqi woman sought out a lookalike on Instagram and murdered her with a friend in order to fake her own death, prosecutors in Bavaria believe. When the blood-covered body of a young woman was found last August in a parked Mercedes in southern Germany, reports initially identified the victim as Sharabin K., a Munich-based 23-year-old beautician with Iraqi roots. Even though some members of Sharabin K.'s family had identified the body, an autopsy report the next day raised questions over its identity. The victim was eventually named as Khadija O., an Algerian beauty blogger from Heilbronn in the neighboring state of Baden-Württemberg, who was also 23. With long black straight hair, a similar complexion, and heavy makeup, the two women looked strikingly alike, police said, leading the German press to refer to the case as the Doppelganger murder. Along with a 23-year-old Kosovan named Shakir K., Sharabin K. was detained on remand by Bavarian police on August 19, 2022. Sorry, this is written how Europeans write things, so I have to correct myself as I'm reading. So, though authorities did not publicly speculate about a motive until this week, the victims and accused have been referred to by their names and an initial, as is customary in the German legal system. Investigators have led us to assume that the accused wanted to go into hiding because of a family dispute and fake her own death to that effect, state prosecutor's office said on Monday morning. Police say several women bearing her resemblance had been contacted by Sharabin K., operating on social media sites under numerous aliases in the week before the murder. By making various promises, she tried to bring about meetings, which was initially unsuccessful. But Khadija O. had agreed to meet, lured by what, this is a very long German name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but the resource will be in the bio, in the description if you want to read it for yourself, reported to be a cosmetics offer. By car, Shakir K. and Sharabin K. allegedly picked her up from her apartment on the day of the murder in a stretch of woodland between Heilbronn and Ingolstadt. The accused pair are alleged to have made up a pretext for the Algerian woman to step outside the vehicle and stabbed her to death.
Damn.
The crime weapon has not been found, but the evidence is overwhelming. The victim was killed with over 50 thrusts of the knife, the face completely disfigured. Prosecutors allege the pair then lifted the victim on the backseat of their Mercedes and drove to Ingolstadt, parking the car in a quiet residential area by the banks of Danube, where it was discovered by Sharabin K.'s parents shortly before midnight of August 16th, 2022.
Oh, that's so sad.
Though investigations were ongoing and further witnesses were still to be interviewed, arrest warrants against Shakir K. and Sharabin K. were issued on the 26th and 27th of January. The pair faced life sentences if convicted. That's that.
Wow. That's awful. That's terrible. It reminds me of an episode of Snapped that I watched once. It's actually, favorite is a weird word to use for something like this, but it's one of the more interesting episodes of Snapped I've seen, where there were two, I believe they were Vietnamese, but they were East Asian sisters. They were twins. And one was just like completely unstable. And she like murdered her sister to try to steal her identity because they were twins. But this makes even less sense. Like, how are you going to take over somebody else's life if you don't even know the person? And why are people helping you?
Exactly. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what kind of dispute would make you feel like you need to fake your own death. What did you do?
Right. What's going on over there?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, don't they, like, dental records? It's too much stuff that tells right. like, the police right. or, you know, whoever does the autopsy. It tells them who you are. So
it's 2023. You can't steal no living person's identity. Yeah, you can't just look in the obituary and just take over somebody's name and social security number no more.
She's a young person. It'd be different if she was like some loner who was like, I don't know, 65 and hadn't talked to their family in 2 decades. Like, this is seems like a young social person who have people that will be like, bitch, you're being very weird. Also, you look different. Like,
right.
Right. That's so wild. And then that they like stabbed her specifically in the face, I'm assuming, so that people wouldn't recognize her. But then again, there's literal DNA.
Yeah,
literal.
It's just too much.
That is unique.
Fingerprint. Yeah, medical history. It's just too much.
That's so sad that like they reached out to all these people on social media, and if this woman who had met up with them just was like not available for that day or something,
yeah,
she would have been living. Damn. I don't know. That's messed up.
Yeah, it is.
And I feel like I got one of them faces. I got to be on the lookout.
All right, y'all, we'll be right back after we pay some bills.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too. Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, a.k.a. the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fails, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge-ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watch.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on the big... Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On the big cunty couch. Mwah.
Yeah, okay. I just, like, feel that way, too. And I like, I've had a lot of people either say that they have met me before and I have no idea who the fuck they are. Mm-hmm. Or they say that I look a lot like people that they know. I'm like, oh. Maybe I just have a face that looks like other people.
Yeah, I get that a lot too. Wow. Well, I gotta take my look to the extreme. I got green hair, as many piercings as I can fit on my face. Like, right, no, that's not me.
I need to go yeah. Pierce my lip or something like you.
Yeah, I got too much jowls. I got too much of this shit going on here.
I love your cheeks.
You're not gonna catch me.
But yeah,
but that is sad though. Damn, that sucks too. Because in this age of like you say, it's 2023. You can't take over a living person's identity, fake your own death, bitch. What? And you and Interpol is gonna be right on your ass. Like, you're in the capital of the international fucking police.
And like, why would you just leave the fucking country or something? That doesn't even make sense. Like, fake your own death and live as this person, like down the street from where you were living before, like.
When you don't know shit about this person and you just thought she was going to take over their life. That's weird.
And why is your friend helping you? Like,
that's another thing that I'm so shook about. Cause like, sometimes when we cover these stories, it's like, this person is obviously unhinged. And there's no way anybody else is going to support this. And they find a whole other person. It's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Like,
no, it don't.
I'm following. Like, it never did.
I'm down.
Like, what?
Huh? I love y'all down. Like, I love y'all so much. If you ever fix your mouth to ask me some wild ass shit like this, I would have to physically hit you. Like, what is going on? Like, are you good?
It's not even a block. It's like oh yeah, I'll pull up, yeah, and I'm gonna beat your ass.
Right. I would be like, I love you, and I'm doing this because I love you. We're gonna have a real serious conversation after I finish kicking your ass. What the
only
fuck?
Time where that's acceptable? Because what? Yeah, no, I'm not going for that.
All right, well, we'll be back with the main story.
All right, we are back. I am the lead investigator for this week, since that amazing story from last week got deleted. Meryl.
Wow. I guess I'll go die now.
No, I literally felt so bad that week when, like, Aaron and Carter were looking at me. They was like, oh, okay, cool. It's your story this week. I was like, no, the fuck is not.
Oh, yeah. You did
that. That was hilarious.
I swore on everything it was not me. And they was like, nah, friend, look at this.
It happens.
I didn't
wait on Aaron to fuck up now.
don't put that in my universe.
Don't you put that on me, Ricky Bobby.
It's a Iron Akilla rite of passage. It's gotta happen. But yeah, no, I'll take that. So yeah, so this week I covered the murder of Kirsten Costas, and y'all said y'all had never heard of it, so that was Yeah, I had to check because I was like, damn, this sounds so familiar. I think it's probably because I've read it before and I just kind of forgot about it or whatever. Okay, so Kirsten Marina Costas was born July 23rd, 1968. I think that makes her Leo. I think so. I don't know. I think it makes her Leo, right?
Because it's after you said the 23rd.
July
23rd?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Leo. Which is very fitting for her personality, and we'll talk about that in a second. So her and her brother grew up in a small suburban town in Orinda, California. There's only, it was a pretty affluent area. There's only one public school. So anybody who went to public school in that entire area went to that one school. It was called Miramonte High School, and a lot of athletes come out of this school. I don't know nothing about sports, but apparently NFL players Ken Dorsey, Brian Barker, Drew Bennett, Olympian Heather Petrie, and a whole bunch of other athletes come out of Miramonte as their alma mater. So in 1984, Kirsten was a super popular sophomore at Miramonte. She was a member of the school's varsity swim team. She was on the cheerleading squad. She was part of this civic group, and I'll explain their purpose later, but it's called the Bobolinks or the Bobolinks or something, and they nicknamed themselves the Bobbies. I thought that was kind of cute.
That is.
Yeah, and she was a very good student. Her parents were also affluent. She was described as like petite, I guess like short, but petite with dark wavy hair. She always wore it in like this really cute wavy short style all the time. So she had like a little look. She had a trademark fashion situation going on.
Come on, signature look.
She was also described as very witty, very outgoing, confident, and sarcastic. According to people who knew her, she didn't go through like an awkward period going through school. She enjoyed school, and she also worked in the student office as another one of her extracurricular activities. And I'm like, girl, how did you do all this?
Right? I was just about to say, you listed like 10 things.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I know Leos are famous for doing stuff like that, but it's given Virgo or something else. But yeah, so basically she was amazing. And everybody in school knew who she was. Even the people who didn't like personally know her knew about her.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the other students at the school was named Bernadette Proti. She was an Italian American. She was born on September 20th, 1968, and she is a Virgo. So yeah, I hope I got that right. But she was described as the opposite of Kirsten. She was pretty average. She had her own little circle of friends, and she really, really wanted to be popular, like really bad. She wanted to succeed, and she wanted to be cute. She wanted to be popular, just like Kirsten or whatever. So she started following Kirsten around, like literally and figuratively. So she's like, whatever Kirsten tried out for, that's what she tried out for. If Kirsten tried out for cheerleading, Bernadette tried out for cheerleading. If
were
she
her
tried,
and Kirsten friends like was it like
mm-mm. they weren't okay, friends,
so but she like stalking her. And
yeah, yeah.
To, like,
she admired her. She admired her, and she wanted to be like her or whatever. And so it kind of snowballed into like this kind of stalker kind of situation. And
it's like we'll Jawbreaker.
Yeah, basically, and we'll see it kind of escalate from here as well. So yeah, Bernadette would try out for anything that Kirsten would try out for. She tried out for the yearbook committee, and she tried out for like other stuff too. She failed to get into any club that Kirsten tried out for, so she was super salty about that. But she did end up trying to work in the student office with Kirsten, and then they allowed her to do that. So Kirsten, I think this is a story according to Bernadette or according to other students. Once Bernadette started to work in the student office, Kirsten started asking her to do like certain favors. They didn't describe what the favors were, but they were favors that Kirsten would have gotten in trouble for if she had done them herself. So she started having Bernadette do them favors or whatever. She was also, after she started doing favors, they started giving her access to the Bobbies. So she started kind of being in Kirsten's circle. She wasn't necessarily like besties with her or nothing like that, but she was kind of like in or whatever.
It was described as a volunteer group that was supposed to organize like fundraising and charitable events and stuff like that, but it was low-key like a sorority basically. So even though she got accepted, like, she still wanted more. So she figured that by like getting closer and closer to Kirsten, then she would be able to like be more popular, or like, I don't know, get cuter or be more fashionable or whatever she was looking for. So she started trying to get closer and closer to Kirsten and started to do more stuff with Kirsten. But Kirsten didn't really want to be friends with her. She wasn't really trying to have her like that close in her circle or whatever. So she'd like any attempts that Bernadette like sort of tried to like get closer to Kirsten, she was just like, yeah, I'm not fucking with her. Like, she, you know, weird, she creepy or whatever. So Bernadette started working babysitting jobs in order to pay for a ski trip that all of the Bobbies were going to go on, that like all the girls were going to go
not
on.
Not a ski trip.
Yeah, these are affluent folks. They do affluent shit.
All right, now.
So when she popped up, she had like secondhand ski equipment on these like outfits and stuff.
Oh golly, whatever will she do? Not a secondhand and, ski suit.
And everybody else had on like brand new shit, brand new equipment. Everybody was trendy and stuff. So apparently Kirsten commented on Bernadette's clothes and was, I guess, they didn't specifically say what the comments were, but she did say that her feelings were hurt by Kirsten's comments.
What year was this taking place in?
1984.
Okay.
Yeah. So, instead of sort of backing off Kirsten because of, you know, the comments that she made about her clothes and stuff like that, she actually started trying harder to be friends with Kirsten. And so at the end of the 1984 school year and at the beginning of the summer, she came up with a plan to win Kirsten over. And in mid-June, knowing that Kirsten was away at cheerleader camp, Bernadette called Kirsten's parents and was like, oh, I'm a member of the Bobbies or whatever. Is it cool if I, like this Friday, like I pick up Kirsten at like 8:30 for this like secret dinner or something like that? And they was with it.
She called them and
because she was away at sleepaway camp, like, she, there wasn't like a way to, for them to like truly confirm. It was a Saturday. My bad, I said it was a Friday.
Living before cell phones was wild.
Yeah. And it's just so much that could have been stopped just with a quick little phone call. What are your little friends call here? What the fuck they talking about? Boom.
Right.
I'm not friends with that hoe. It's over with. Story's over. But because they had landlines, it's just not as communicative. But so Bernadette told her parents that she was going on a babysitting job. So she could cover her own tracks, and she covered for Kirsten as well. So with the plan set in motion, she went to go pick up Kirsten that following Saturday, and Kirsten was super excited or whatever. She ran out to the car.
So she thought this was going to be a surprise dinner. Like,
yeah, she thought it was supposed to be a surprise dinner for the new, like Bobbies or whatever. And then she gets to the car and she's like, what?
Like, what are you doing
here? What are you doing here? I thought I was going to get picked up by the girls. Like, we supposed to be going to dinner. Why are you here? So she still gets in the car and she realized
better than me.
Right. No, I would have turned my ass back around and went in the house. So she realized that she couldn't have been going to dinner because Bernadette had on a tracksuit with like a jean jacket on or something. Mm-hmm. And she was like, bitch, we're not going no fucking where. So she confronted Bernadette about it or whatever. And then Bernadette was like, yeah, I made the dinner up. I'm actually going to take you to a party. So Kirsten was like, okay. And again, it still sus, because like, if you're going to a party, why you got that on?
Right.
Right. Why didn't you just tell me?
Yeah. Why didn't you call me and tell me what the plan was so I can go along with the rules, you know? So that's a whole other like red flag. So Kirsten noticed that there was a knife in the car. And mm-hmm. Bernadette laughed it off, saying, oh, my sister keeps this knife in here so that she could cut fruits and vegetables.
What?
Yeah.
just a horrible knife. And I'm like, who's in the car just cutting up fruits and veggies all the time? Like, that doesn't,
you know, with so many other excuses.
It's so for protection.
Like, yeah, that's
That's literally I'm driving by myself and I'm a 16 year old girl. I'm not about to not have no kind of weapon in here. Put it back. Lord. Why you looking through my shit?
Mind your business. But
she came up with that whack ass lie talking about some cutting fruits and vegetables, and I'm just like, okay, girl, be a prep cook in the car. We love it. So they reached the town where the dinner was supposed to be, and then according to Bernadette, Kirsten asked her to pull into a parking lot so they could smoke a blunt or whatever. So they sat there.
Joint.
yeah, a joint. My bad.
It's the 80s, not a blunt.
And they went white.
Yeah.
And it looked like blunts. And it looked like dingleberries. They'd be so skinny. Uh-huh. So they sat there for 40 minutes. And then Kirsten offered her a hit. And then, according to Bernadette, this is what started the argument between them or whatever.
Uh-oh.
Now, later on, it says this, but I'm going to say it now. Her friends was like, no. As much as she wanted to be Kirsten's friend, as much as she was like a fucking wannabe and, you know, so desperate to be in her good graces or whatever, there's no way that Kirsten would have offered her a hit and of that joint and she wouldn't have taken it. Like, she most definitely would have took it.
Right.
So later on, Kirsten asked about the party or whatever. And she also learned that her invitation to the party, quote unquote, was secondhand. So Kirsten wasn't even invited. It was more like she knew about the party type of deal. And she was like, oh no, I'm not taking a secondhand invitation to nowhere. You're going to take me back home. I'm not dealing with this shit. So at this time, like, this is when shit started to take a turn. So she refused. And then, Bernadette told her, like, you're going to spoil everything. And then, Kirsten responded, there's nothing to spoil. So this caused Bernadette to start crying, and she was asking why Kirsten was so mean and why she wouldn't be her friend. And according to Bernadette, again, she said in response, Kirsten rolled her eyes, leading to Bernadette verbalizing how much she admired Kirsten and wanted to be like her. Kirsten saw these confessions as pathetic and told as much to Bernadette.
Wow. That's sad.
Yeah. It is very fucking sad.
But why you got this girl kidnapped in your car? Like, this is very weird.
It's strange.
And that frontal lobe is lobing. Because yeah. I'm just like, go find... If you consider yourself, I don't know, whatever type of outcast or loser or whatever the clique is in high school or whatever, you could just go be friends with them. You don't have to go after this single girl, like, who's the most popular one in the school. You could just have your own group.
But, like, in the 80s and the 70s, 80s and 90s, I feel like that, like, girl world, like, cliquey, mm-hmm. like, Heathers, Mean Girls kind of thing was, like, so prevalent. You really did want to be the queen bee. Like, if you weren't around that person, like, if that was something that was important to you, then... I can imagine how iced out that person felt. I felt like I was like one of those chameleon kind of people. Like, I hung out with a lot of different groups of people, mm-hmm. but I could see how it could feel like isolating to really want to be a part of this particular mm-hmm. social sphere and not being able to do it.
That's real. I was so invisible in high school. It's so hard for me to understand that. Literally only a few people knew who I was in a school of, I don't know, hundreds of kids, thousands of kids. I don't fucking know how many went there, but I just was never seen. So it's just like wanting that badly to be seen. Also, in none of the schools that I went to, was there ever like a clique or like the one person who like ruled the school? Like, you definitely had like, okay, you got the Pokemon kids over here. You got the Naruto kids doing that weird run up the hallway, and you got the athletes and the nerd. But it was never like that. So I never understood that. But yeah, like that's a good way of putting it. So yeah, that's a great observation, because I'm like, I don't know what the fuck is your problem. Like, why do you want this so bad? So at this point, Kirsten gets out the car
and she ends up at the home of Alexander and Mary Jane Arnold. Kirsten told the couple, and she knew them, and she told them that she had been out with a friend, but the friend had gotten quote unquote weird on her. She asked if she could use their phone to call her parents. And it was like, yeah, sure. These are adults.
Okay.
So they didn't answer at the Costas house, and everybody was out. So Alex Arnold, the husband, offered to drive her home. He later recalled that Kirsten was calm and talkative, speaking about school activities and her social life. And if she had been concerned about her interaction with Bernadette, then he didn't know it at the time. Like, it didn't seem that way. She was like very calm. So Bernadette, who watched Kirsten leave the car and enter the Arnold home, she followed the car back to Orinda. So, according to Kirsten, every time, like, I guess, like, every so, like, miles or every so minutes or whatever, she just got, like, more and more angry. And she could just imagine that Kirsten was going to, like, gossip about this with her friends. Like, oh, they're weirdo, and, like, this is what the fuck happened to me. And they did this and all this stuff like that. So, at this time, she was just like, there's no way I'm going to be friends with this girl anymore. Like, this is completely done. And that just pissed her off even more.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to her home, and Kirsten at first started towards the house, but then she changed course and headed for where Bernadette had pulled in and parked on the street. And Bernadette grabbed the knife from the car and met Kirsten on the lawn at her neighbor's house. So Kirsten, and this is a trigger warning. I always forget my trigger warnings at the beginning of my episode. This is a trigger warning for extreme violence. This is where the turning point is. Kirsten backed up and she yelled at Bernadette to go away, telling her, you know, like, you parked on the street, get the fuck away, whatever. Bernadette responded by attacking Kirsten with the knife, stabbing her twice in the stomach with an 18-inch blade.
Oof.
Whoa. The one she's supposedly chopping up. Fruit with?
Yeah, 18 inches. And I'm like, why would somebody need an 18-inch knife to chop up fruits and veggies? That is not real. So Kirsten's hand was hit because she held her hand up to protect herself. So she then fell on the ground, and then Bernadette stabbed her twice in the back before she ran back to her car and she took off.
Damn.
So Alexander Arnold, who was still in the car, because he was supposed to be watching Kirsten go to her house or whatever.
Right.
He saw somebody, you know, rush up on, he saw somebody rush Kirsten. He heard the altercation and he saw Kirsten fall. Assuming that, I don't think he saw specifically Bernadette. I don't think he was able to describe her because he called her a figure, and because of what happens next also. So he thought a fist fight broke out, and so he took off, and he didn't know at the time that she had been assaulted at all. He didn't know that she had been stabbed.
Weird.
So Kirsten got on her feet, and she ended up, like, kind of falling over, walking to her neighbor's house. She banged on the front door, and she fell out on the front porch as Arthur Hillman opened the door, which is her neighbor. It says he cradled her as she bled to death, and he called 911.
Wow.
He asked Kirsten who had stabbed her, but reportedly the only thing that she said was that she couldn't breathe. So Kirsten was taken to the hospital. So the police started, like, surrounding the scene and everything. Alexander Arnold returned, and he wasn't able to catch the car. Like, he was following Bernadette for a second, but he wasn't able to catch it. So he told the officers, you know, what happened and stuff like that. And then he mentioned, like, a weird friend, but that's all he could say. He also described Kirsten's attacker as a chunky teenage girl with stringy blonde hair, attire in track pants, and driving a Ford Pinto. Now, the reason why I said he must not have I guess his description must not have been like sufficient is because of what happens next. So meanwhile, Bernadette arrived home around 10 p.m. And she thought that Kirsten had told the police, like, who stabbed her, had described, you know, her to the police. She thought it was over with. So she waited for the cops to arrive, but they never came. So she ended up taking a walk with her mom around the neighborhood. The next morning, the community of Arinda was like basically terrified about this murder because it's such a small town and stuff like this doesn't happen. They were trying to understand how it could possibly happen, and they came to the conclusion that it had to be an outsider. So that's what they ended up trying to look for.
Why do they keep doing that? They did that in the story that I read.
Yeah.
The Eric Smith one. They could, like, God forbid it's somebody from our area.
I don't understand it, but I'm trying to imagine what it's like growing up in a town where literally nothing happens.
Yeah.
Because every single city that I've been in, some bullshit went down. Like, I'm talking about from the age of, like, 5. Like, shootouts right. There was a shootout at the park when I was like 5 or 6 years old. We moved and went to a quote unquote better neighborhood. Niggas getting robbed. I mean, it really doesn't matter where you are. So I'm trying to imagine what these areas look like in, I don't know.
These idyllic neighborhoods where the police actually give a fuck and like patrol and keep the miscreants and the Negroes out. Like,
yeah. And like the police know the names of the kids and like mm-hmm. wave at them on their way to school and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, never seen that. Never felt that.
I don't know her.
They slamming niggas on the pavement
for fucking nothing.
Because we found some shit on the ground, so we finna lock all 10 of y'all up at the store, like that type right. shit. So yeah, I wonder what it's like to feel like this. Like it has to be an outside. Like, who could have done this? So a whole bunch of so hundreds of mourners turned out for her funeral, including Bernadette.
Now,
yeah,
okay,
it's real disrespectful around here. At this point, I'm thinking she probably thought she was gonna get away with this shit. Like, oh, okay, they didn't come. Anybody said nothing about me. Okay, cute.
But isn't that common? I feel like at all the TV shows I've watched and stuff, mm-hmm. like the investigators always look at the funerals or like the vigils.
But it's like, girl, they take pictures of those funerals because they mm-hmm. know that whoever it is trying to outsmart the cops. Like, oh, why would the killer show up at the funeral? That's exactly where they would be. They mm-hmm. always return to the scene of the crime. They always go to the funeral. Girl, stay home. Like, if that's what you're really gonna do, if you're gonna call yourself trying to get away with this heinous act, stay your ass at home.
But she was gonna get, I mean, like, it would have been weird either way, because she is on that team with her. They know that she's like, because when someone dies in high school, like, you mm-hmm. don't even have to be close friends. People just show up because mm-hmm. they're a classmate. Like, I remember I had a classmate die, and it was like everybody from my whole grade came. So like, it would have been very weird if she didn't show up, especially because they did know each other, and people knew that, like, you know, they knew each other.
True. Damn, you're right. That's very right. And that's how I would get caught. That's why I'm not going to do no shit like this.
Please don't.
That's why. That's darn it. Spoiled all my plans. So investigators started questioning students, and including Bernadette, who took a lie detector test. It was inconclusive. It didn't prove guilt or innocence. So they was like, okay, cool. They just let her go. She gave her alibi that she was babysitting, and nobody verified it, which is like, okay, cool. So of course, here we go, police ain't shit. Like, it's every fucking story,
right?
So there was a girl named Nancy Kane, who was a quote-unquote goth girl, and she had been picked on by Kirsten, and she was bullied by a whole bunch of other students, and they came to the conclusion that she was responsible for the murder.
Oh no.
Okay.
That's so fucked up.
It's super fucked up.
Like, you done already been the victim of all this bullying, and now they finna call you a murderer?
Yeah.
It's giving, like, satanic panic.
Yeah, really. Most definitely. And because she was goth, I think that fueled it even more. It's like, oh, you were picked on by her, and you already kind of got that, like, weird, mm-hmm. dangerous, weird personality or whatever. So, yeah.
They said, oh, you wear docs? Prison.
Not docs.
My high school self would have been in prison too, if that's the criteria.
Stop. You were goth?
No, I wasn't goth. I had Doc Martens.
Oh, okay. I was about to say.
I was going
to
say Aaron?
We about Y'all would have known that.
We about to pause live on air, and I need to see pics right now. Like, what the fuck? But, you know. So the rumors were so bad about Nancy that her mom wouldn't allow her to take a lie detector test. And the girl ended up having to transfer to another school for the fall. And it says while the transfer did make her life easier, it seemed to pretty much make it official that she did it.
Right.
So they were like, oh, okay, she transferred schools and she's not gonna take a lie detector test. Okay, boom, yeah, she did it. So everybody's gossiping or whatever. So this is a super small town. Everybody's come up with their theories and stuff like that. So they again go with the theory that, you know, this murder was committed. I don't know why I forgot the word. This murder was committed by an outsider, but someone floated the theory that maybe like Bernadette had propositioned Kirsten and like Kirsten freaked out or something.
Like proposition, like
as far as like queer like
coochies.
Okay, yeah.
I wish this was a visual thing.
I mean, we could take a clip. I couldn't remember what scissoring was.
I've been forgetting the most random words. It is always happening when somebody's listening to me tell a fucking story. Like, how do I forget murder? This is a true
murder podcast. Scissoring.
Okay. Aaron's like, those are y'all two favorite things. What's going on?
I'm mad because we said it too much.
Right. Listen, I'm all about that action. Okay. We don't need to talk about it.
Okay. So now we're in the fall of, you know, the same school year. Bernadette goes back to school. She continues her life as normal. She stays in the student activity center. She stays a Bobby or whatever.
Oh, this is months later.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is because I think this happened in the summer.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this happened like late summer or something like that. So this is probably at least like a couple months later. So yeah, new school year started. Bernadette's back. But she didn't know that Orinda police had already contacted the FBI, asked them for a psychological profile on whoever murdered Kirsten. So they gave their profile in October. And when it came back, it said that Kirsten's killer would be a girl of the same age. A girl who was the same age as the victim, and that Kirsten definitely knew the girl.
Wow. It's wild that they can like do that.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's because, and I don't know shit, y'all, I don't work for the FBI, don't come for me. But I think it's because she was killed so close to her home. It had to have been somebody who, especially because she had just gotten out of the car with somebody, it had to have been somebody she was friends with or somebody who was like in the neighborhood or whatever. That's just my theory. I don't know. So her parents hired a private investigator, again, affluent folks, and their main mission was obviously to find the killer. And while he was reviewing the case files and the evidence, he noticed Bernadette's alibi, that the one that went unverified.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a call to the family that she said that she was babysitting for, and they was like, no, she never babysitted for us. So he immediately called the police.
That's so embarrassing for them. Why wouldn't you follow up?
Right. That's the first thing that you should do is verify everybody's alibi. Why would that go unverified? And I think that's another way that you know that like these people in this super small town just don't think it's somebody from
right.
Oh, these just teenage girls. Okay, she said she was babysitting. You off the hook. Like,
right.
No, verify everybody because it's most definitely somebody that she fucking knew. So Bernadette went back home and she tried to talk to her mom, but her mom was like, I'm tired. Like, you can
please.
we'll talk tomorrow. So she wrote her parents a letter. And in the letter that she confessed to killing Kirsten.
I cannot fucking imagine. Ooh. Can you imagine your kid writes you a letter confessing to some shit like that? What do you do? I don't even know what I would do. I'm gonna be 100% honest. I do not know what I would do.
I would be paralyzed. I mean, I would go down to the station to see if she turned herself in already. But as far as in general, I would just be I would just be paralyzed. I think I would probably, that would affect me for the rest of my life in a way that, like, I don't think I could ever have a life after that.
Yeah.
Like, not only did that happen, I raised somebody who could do something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And was living with me for months and months after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
And that's on me. And I found out in a letter. Like, I wasn't even able to, like, say goodbye. Or, you know, that would break my heart. So Anna, she confessed to killing Kirsten. She also said that she was able to live with it, but she couldn't ignore it. Whatever that means. So she begged her parents to, you know, still love her. And as a PS, she asked them not to ask why she had done it, because she claimed that she didn't know. Hmm. So Bernadette,
but she had the knife, so it was premeditated. No,
yeah, that knife was not for fruit.
That's what I'm saying. There's definitely something that in the testimony later that kind of explains that. But still, okay. I don't understand why she had 18 inches.
Right.
That's big. I'm sorry. I don't even know how to do that with my hands. It's like this long, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, that's a machete. That's for survival. You couldn't fruits and veggies if you're like playing naked and afraid. I don't get why you keep that in your car. But anyway. So Bernadette left the letter with her mom, and she told her to wait 30 minutes before reading it. And then she went to school.
Mm-mm, I'm reading it immediately.
To school?
Yeah. To school, babes? Like, you gonna go to school? You just confessed to murder.
I don't understand the logic behind that, because my thing is, like, the waiting 30 minutes thing is so you can make sure nobody stops you from going to the police station. So that's what I thought that was.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she went to fucking school. And so her parents read the letter and they came and picked her ass up.
Right.
Like, bitch, we thought that's where you was going. So they took her to the police station. She confessed. Her parents
immediately was like, nah.
Mm-mm. Yeah, we're not playing those types of games.
Ooh, shit.
They recorded her confession, and she said that she did it because she felt inferior to Kirsten. Kirsten was so confident, and she was just so, I guess, so much lower than her. She also said that she was embarrassed by the fact that her family was poor in such an affluent city. And that their economic standing was like something that Kirsten used to make fun of her about, like, a lot. So, in spite of her confession, they still wanted to take it to trial. And my guess as to why this happened is to kind of make the community feel safer. Like, we'd most definitely caught this person who did this big thing, and it's going to go through, I guess, like, the proper, I don't know, public sort of show that makes everybody feel safer or something like that, or that makes everybody feel like they're getting justice. So yeah, they charged her with second degree murder because of her age, and her defense offered a plea, and it was rejected because there was somebody who wanted to charge her with, like, first degree murder. So the next 3 days of testimony was publicized. It was widely seen as, like, a source of entertainment, like, not necessarily, like, for justice for Kirsten, but it was more so like a show, like, a, you know, for the public or whatever.
I hate that.
It was also seen as a form of, like, torture for the Costas, because they didn't want that. So it was, like, really devastating for the Costa and the Proti families that they had to, like, endure that and watch that. So they tried to show that Bernadette had premeditated Kirsten's homicide, but the judge only found her guilty of second degree murder. This was on April Fool's Day, 1985. And Bernadette was sentenced to the maximum at the time, because she was 15, which was 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
So she was sent to California Youth Authority in Ventura.
she ended up getting her GED. And she paroled out after 7 years. She got her release at age 23 on June 10th, 1992. And it was almost an 8-year anniversary of when she had killed Kirsten.
Oof.
So there was someone on the parole board who dissented, and he's widely celebrated for expressing his opinion. He said that Bernadette remains a danger to the public and is in need of further treatment to address her inability to control her anger and her impulses. But around this time, there was a huge push for like reform when it came to youth incarceration mm-hmm. and like youth, I guess, justice. So this was seen as like a win for that. Like if they were able to give her like parole early or whatever, then it would be a good look for Arinda. So she left California. She changed her name. She got a career, and she ended up married, and she had kids.
Damn. It'd be so wild to me when these murderers end up having kids.
They're
just out here.
Yes, especially when they were children, and they murdered another child.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary to me. And I don't know what to think of that, because I don't know how much rehabilitation she received in those 8 years. But at the same time, with someone on the board literally saying she needs more treatment, she needs like more help, and she's not getting that because she's getting released. I don't know.
I got mixed feelings. I'd want to know more about like what kind of rehabilitation she had, just because like these people on the parole board, they don't really know these folks, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they just sit on the parole board and make a judgment based on some interview questions that they ask them, and maybe some questions they ask the CEO or the warden, but they're mm-hmm. not a part of like their day-to-day lives or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So this person wanting to keep someone in a cage, like, I'm not celebrating that, but like I would want to know more like about said rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's legit, because the way they say rehabilitation is just jail, just sitting.
Right.
It's not learning anything, no therapy, no medication,
right?
No learning impulse control, nothing. So, and then also her being 15 when it happened, there's no like evaluation of just how developed she is, like mentally mm-hmm. and emotionally. So yeah, no, you're right. So the Costas family left Arinda. They went to Alaska. Then they went to Hawaii. They begged the parole board not to let Bernadette out, but they did it anyway. And they were just disgusted, and they were just discouraged, and they felt really defeated. So they ended up leaving for Alaska. So this case ended up inspiring the movie A Friend to Die For.
Mm-hmm.
And Death of a Cheerleader in the UK. I think the one in the US, it said it featured Tori Spelling as Kirsten.
Oh,
I've definitely seen the poster for it, and we can put the picture for the movie up on Instagram. But if y'all see this picture, y'all will recognize it immediately. It looked like I get it mixed up with the Heathers all the time.
Heathers is that shit. I love it.
So yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I remember this. Also, the case led to two songs. I don't know if y'all know any of these artists, but there's one by Marcy Playground called Death of a Cheerleader, and one called Bernadette Prodi by Seeing Means More. They sound like rock songs.
That's so weird. Making a song about a murder of a teenage girl. I don't know. I guess I'd have to listen to the songs. I feel like that's weird, though.
I feel like everybody's obsessed with teenage girls. Everybody's obsessed with like the culture of teenagers in general.
Yeah, especially cheerleaders from that time period specifically.
True.
Yeah.
Like, if she wasn't a cheerleader, it probably wouldn't have been as sensationalized.
True. So the last part of this is just a little bit of, it's backtracking a little bit from Bernadette's sister, Gina, who testified at trial that she kept a knife in the car to cut fruits and veggies.
You lying.
The sister said that?
Yeah, the sister said that.
No.
And yeah. And I'm like, I think she's just covering for her sister. I think she's just trying to normalize her having that big ass knife in the car.
You said 18 or 16 inch?
18 inch.
Because I'm looking at what an 18 inch knife look like, because I'm not buying it.
Like, that doesn't even fit in a drawer.
Bitch, this is like big as fuck. Absolutely. No. Please Google it, please.
Hold on. I'm gonna Google it now. Hold
please
on.
18 inches, are you sure it said 18? Because this is ridiculously big. I'm like,
no, there is no way. If this is 18 inches, that's longer than a ruler. Like, no. No.
Yeah, no. Uh-oh. That's a sword.
Literally.
So like a bread knife?
No, this is longer than a bread knife. This is a big ass knife, friend.
No, yes. It's a chopper.
Ain't no way. Yeah. For veggies and fruits, you're not cutting apples with that, bitch. That's for cutting humans.
Yeah, I would roll my eyes at that.
I would use that to fight off a bear. Like,
yeah, I so mean, the Costas family.
Trying to like stand up for your sister, but that's a joke.
Yeah, the Costas family literally said the exact same thing. They said, no, ain't no way. And nobody keeps an 18 inch knife to pare fruits and vegetables in your car. That's not a thing. But yeah. But yeah, that's the case of the murder of Kirsten Costas.
Wow.
And I also looked up like just Bernadette Prodi and like just trying to find like what I could about her in present day since she is out. And a lot of people are like oh, this is her. Like, she changed her name, but this is her. And they have like websites up of like identifying who she is like these days and stuff like that.
Damn.
So yeah. Wild.
Besides the murder part, that it like it just feels like a movie from the 1980s of like these cliques in high school, and there's a popular girl and the girl that wants to be like her but also hates her. Like it was just so like,
I mean, even including the murder part, because, I mean, some of the thrillers are like that.
I don't watch those, but I believe you. But, yeah, that's wild.
I see some pictures from her when she's older. I wonder if, like, she's, like, out, like living a public life. Because I'm like, I would stay off social media for the rest of time. Why the fuck are there pictures of her?
Yeah. What's her last name again? Prodi?
Yeah, Protti.
Yeah, I would disappear.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I hope at the very least she truly did get some real rehabilitation. I hope that her family, that Kirsten's family can find some peace. And I'm going to pray for those kids of hers because that's wild.
That's so wild.
She better be sweet as fuck to them kids. Yeah. And it better not ever be a day where she snap on them because it's like, who? You?
Right. I wonder if they know.
Yes. Oh my God.
Mm. Can you imagine?
No, that's terrible.
No.
All right. Well, we'll be back with Should This Be a Crime? Should this be a crime? Two birds, one stone.
And we're back. So, for Should This Be a Crime, we have got an article from January 31st of this year, which is 2023. It's wild that it is 2023.
Right.
Jesus.
This is the year that was in the Black Mirror episode.
Please, please.
Wait, on.
You which do not need to do that.
What Black Mirror episode was it in?
Oh no, I was just talking shit. I was just a picture 2023 is like the future. Like, oh, way far in the future. Oh my God.
Did y'all see that thing with like the dad from the Jetsons was born last year or something?
What?
It fucked me up. It fucked me up bad.
Wait, who?
The dad from the Jetsons, that cartoon.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. Into the Should This Be a Crime? So the title of this article is Basketball Coach Fired After Impersonating 13-Year-Old Player During Game.
And how?
Let's find out. An assistant high school basketball coach in Virginia has been fired after impersonating a 13-year-old player during a game this past weekend. Arlesha Boykins, 22, an assistant junior varsity basketball coach at Churchland High School in Portsmouth, was canned from the job after the parents of a girl she was reportedly impersonating complained to school officials. Sports journalist Craig Loper first reported for local NBC affiliate Wavy TV. Portsmouth Public Schools confirmed to HuffPost that Boykins is no longer an employee. Gotta have up out of there quick. Coaches always preach to the kids about integrity and those types of things, so I was just shocked, the father of the 13-year-old told Loper. Sources told the channel that the varsity coach was, quote, encouraging the behavior during the game and has also been fired. The JV head coach, too, is no longer working for the division, the school district told HuffPost. Footage of Boykins wearing the number one can be seen in the news video below. They really got the video up here in this article. Mm-hmm. HuffPost has reached out to Boykins for comment. The players on both the JV and varsity teams decided at a team meeting attended by their parents not to continue the season, the school district said. That sucks for the players. The varsity and JV teams' calendars show the remaining games have been canceled. Meanwhile, the parents of the girl whom Boykins impersonated say their daughter is no longer interested in attending Churchland High School. They told Wavy they are still waiting for school officials to apologize. This is not the first incident this month in which an adult attempted to blend in with teenage students. Last week, New Jersey police and school officials accused Hai Jong Shin, 29, of providing a forged birth certificate in order to enroll at New Brunswick High School in New Jersey. And that is the story.
How the fuck do y'all think y'all gonna get away with this? A 13-year-old?
22 pretended to be a 13-year-old.
To win a game?
To win a game. A basketball game.
Your big ass is not gonna be mistaken as a 13-year-old.
Why the fuck are you doing this? It is high school basketball. It is never that serious.
It's ever. Not. It's barely even JV.
It was literally JV.
What?
Literally JV.
13?
You're on junior varsity of a high school basketball team. Why are you risking your career, your integrity, and your fucking reputation?
I could see a 20-something in imitating like a
college student.
An early college student, yeah. Maybe at best like an 18-year-old. If you just, because you know some 18-year-olds be fucking huge. You know some shit like that. But a 13-year-old, somebody who's supposed to be in eighth grade,
you got childbearing hips. What is going on?
Childbearing.
What are you doing out here on this basketball court right now?
Leave me alone. I fucking say it's a crime because, bitch, get your life together. There was no thought put into this plan at all whatsoever. There's not even a good motive. I don't care if you wanted your son's team to win or your friend's team to win or whatever you had going on. The person who enrolled in high school as a 29-year-old, like, why do you want to be around teenagers all day?
That's not fun. That is very weird.
I feel like the better plan would have been to find another 13-year-old that's better at basketball and have them impersonate this player.
You put more thought into this plan and this whole, like, 2 minutes of you knowing about this story than any of the people in this story.
Right.
Not 29. You 30. That's just a layover to 30.
And then the 29-year-old that tried to enroll in high school, so she went to the school for 4 days, but nobody knows why she did it. Like, she didn't give the police a reason.
That is so weird.
They did an interview with some girl, and then she was like, she asked her a question. It was a very age-specific question, like, do you want to go to this thing, or like, what, I don't know, what school did you come from? It was something she asked her, and the girl just like was dodging the question and like walked out for some shit, and she was like, no. And she said that in the interview. That's why I thought it was so funny. She was like, so I asked her, da-da-da-da, and she was acting real sketchy. She was like, there's something weird about that.
That's so bizarre.
And it was a black girl too. That shit was so funny.
I wish I could quote exactly what she said.
Well,
people are so weird.
Yeah, no.
Anytime it involves weird relationships with children, it's automatically a crime for me. Because, like you said, what the fuck you gonna do with a bunch of high schoolers all around you?
Mm-mm,
8 hours a day, 5 days a week. For what?
You a pedo. If you're not getting paid, like, I could literally honestly see if it was like, okay, cool, you kind of like faked your credentials because you're really good at dancing, but you just needed to pad it up to be like a dance coach or something like that, you know?
No. This bitch has a college degree.
Okay, I'm trying to make all excuses for this whole, and I can't do it. I'm sorry. Like, if you're trying to get a job around kids, if you're trying to get paid to like help kids, that's one thing. But if you want to like be around kids and you want them to think that you're their age and you want to, at the most basic level, you want to have relationships with these kids, because that's what happens when you go to school. You form relationships with kids, and that's fucking gross.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It's a crime.
This is not just 21 Jump Street. Like, take your big grown ass somewhere the fuck else.
Weirdo. And they shouldn't even pass in that shit, because 21 Jump Street, Channing Tatum, big ass, the one who was in Step Up, I don't think so.
Yeah, no. A crime. No.
That's a crime. I'm sorry. And get you some adult friends. Get you some help. And then
get you an adult therapist. Yes.
Yes.
It sounded familiar. There was a show called Undercover High. Did y'all ever watch that?
No, but it sounds like a ripoff of 21 Jump Street.
Yes, no, slick. But it was like a reality show, like a experimental type show where they sent actual adults back to high school.
I hate that.
The other kids didn't know that they were adults. And it was like, I don't know what the point was, but it's like this.
Mm-mm. That's gross.
I don't know why they did that, but
that seems very fucking weird.
Y'all trying to spy on kids? That even that, like, what are y'all doing?
Y'all recording them? Like, how did you get consent for this? No, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, it was like a whole reality show. And I guess they told the high schoolers that they were doing a documentary on the school, but really they were following around these adults that were posing as high schoolers.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, I'm not fucking with that. Y'all will do everything to spy on everybody except the cops.
Right.
Send somebody to spy on them niggas. They beating everybody ass. They shooting everybody.
Right.
Go spy on them. See what they're talking about.
Mm-mm.
Spy on the government or something. I don't fucking know. Not children. There's literally nothing that children can possibly do that I want to know about. Like,
not like that.
They don't have no meth ring at the school. And if they do, send another kid and then I don't fucking know. There's
a different way to handle issues with children than to pretend to be a child, for sure.
That's a big no for me.
Yeah.
A crime.
Crime. Well, on that note, let us know what you think. You can find us online
at I Ain't a Killer Podcast on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, and I Ain't a Killer Pod on Twitter.
And you can listen to us on Apple Music, on Spotify, and literally anywhere else where you can find podcasts.
You better put on that radio voice, friend. I hear you.
You hit a button? You hit a button?
Ah! It got real sexy at the end. Oh, my God.
This is a quiet storm.
Please.
Let me stop playing before I get a radio job for real.
Thanks for joining us. Bye, y'all.
Bye.